informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we got a couple of tickets to give away to Galveston Mardi Gras. Join us for the 111th celebration of Mardi Gras Galveston, the third biggest Mardi Gras in the country. Two full weekends of family-friendly fun will consist of 22 parades, 15 balcony parties, 22 live concerts, vendors, and over 3 million beads. Enjoy live performances by Three Doors Down, Signo, Matt Stell, and others, plus a special Fiesta Gras Grand Marshal appearance by Joel's guy, Texans defensive lineman Roy Lopez. Find the full schedule and more info at MardiGrasGalveston.com. General admission tickets start at just $16. Buy your tickets online or the day of the festival. That's MardiGrasGalveston.com. But right now, if you're caller number 4 to 713-780-ESPN, a pair of tickets going to you. Caller number 4, 713-780-3776. So Troy Aikman's going to Monday Night Football. We don't know the ramifications of what that means for the Monday Night Football booth. I'm holding out hopes that they get Al Michaels aboard, and you put Al Michaels with Troy Aikman. I think that's a really good booth, and I think that's the best booth that they had since Mike Tirico and Gruden. I don't feel like it's been a great booth since then. I think Joe Tess gets knocked a little bit more than he should. He's more of a college voice. Really, I like Joe Tess. No, but he's more of a college voice for me. That's why I think he's more of a college voice. Because I think over the top plays well in college and not pros.
But over the top is one thing when it's about a play. Like a Gus Johnson's way over the top.
Yeah, but he gets really excited about one play.
He gets over the top, like cheesy on a lot of things. Like he overdoes. And the other thing that always bothered me was right from the get-go from starting lineups, everybody had a nickname.
Yeah, I don't like that.
You got to kind of establish who the guy is for the average viewer.
Yeah, first. I agree. I wasn't a big fan of Booger. I thought Joe Tess was a better play-by-play guy than Booger was a color guy. This Monday Night Football crew, they're not bad, but to me they'd be like a number two or a number three at CBS or Fox. I don't think they should have the lead chair for Monday Night Football. And I like Riddick. I think Steve Levy's very good, even though he's a little bit more of a hockey guy.
Yeah.
But Vanessa and Gallant kicking around the idea. What would be your favorite booth? If you could put together the best play-by-play guy, the best color guy, they mentioned the best sideline reporter as well, but I'm kind of biased and look play-by-play color. Like, what is the booth you're putting together? I think it's important, too, for the sport. Like, Kevin Harlan, to me, would be my top play-by-play guy for basketball on TV. Mm-hmm. He'd probably be like third or fourth for my NFL. Although if it was radio, he'd be at number one on that list. So if you're looking at TV football, what's your fantasy booth?
Man, see, you dropped this on me. I didn't know we were going to do this. I'm trying to think of – I'll be honest with you. From a color analyst standpoint, Gruden was really good.
Yeah, he was.
Because Gruden gave you kind of the best of both worlds. He gave you that kind of fun – kind of off-the-cuff kind of guy that could yuck it up a little bit. But he gave you a coach's perspective. He gave you kind of his experience perspective to where I really enjoyed that booth. And I thought that ESPN, not that there's anything wrong with the guys that they had a year ago, but like you said, they all had different fortes in terms of their best sports and what they do best. And they were really just trying to try out Greasy and Riddick. I think that Tirico and Gruden were great together.
Yeah,
for sure. I think ultimately, though, if I could say my dream team, dead or alive, it would probably have to be, I would go Al Michaels play-by-play, and I would go John Madden color.
Ooh, I didn't even think about the John Madden.
John Madden just gave you everything.
Yeah, he was. John Madden was really good. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What's your dream broadcast duo? I wasn't alive to hear Cosell, so I really have no idea about Cosell. Al Michaels and Brent Musburger are my top two football guys, although I was raised with him calling college football, not the NFL. So, like, if I had to go college route, I'd go Musburger on my college broadcast, mm-hmm. and I would go Al Michaels on my NFL broadcast. When it comes to a color guy, it's a little bit more difficult for me because I guess I've always, like, looked at it from a play-by-play point of view. I think Aikman's good. He's not my dream, like,
see,
fantasy broadcast
booth. Yeah, we didn't differentiate
booth.
Pro versus college because I think for college, I think Herbstreit can be a real D-bag really on Twitter, but he's really good doing games.
Herbstreit's really good on the college side. Color commentator for the NFL. See, like, right now, I think that the very best color guy right now would be, like, Gruden. In recent memory, although he's not hireable, I don't think anymore.
Right,
but we're talking about dream broadcast duo. I would love to hear what Al Michaels and Gruden sounded like together. I think that could be entertaining because Gruden's like over the top energy, and then you have Al Michaels who's just like silky smooth. You know,
Yeah, look, that's why I think that's why I said Al Michaels for as good as Summerall and Madden were, Michaels brought out even a little bit more of John Madden in terms of the true football aspects from time to time as well. But I think that Madden just gave so much from just the kind of layman's relations to people related to just boom, right there. Here's a guy, when he runs, he goes faster. I mean, those are kind of things that people are like, hey, you know what? It's really common sense, but yeah. But then he would get into some of his coaching and some of his experiences, and you're like, man. And the Uncle Rube story in the Madden documentary with Favre, too, where he worked it into the telecast, those are things we used to do to have fun on Rockets Radio. Like Sean Bajani, who you know very well, or other people, we'd say, what's the word of the day? And either Craig or myself would write down what the word of the day in front of us. And in one way, shape, or form, we had to work that word into something during the broadcast. And that was part of the fun. But it's also because you become more interactive with the audience. And I think the connection with the audience, too. Because I think from a college football perspective, I'm not a big Chris Fowler guy.
I think he's solid.
With Herb, he's solid. Yeah. But he's not the kind of guy that I would expect for play-by-play.
I like Musburger way more.
I like Brad Nessler. Brad Nessler, for a lot of years, has been really solid.
I like Nessler more about 7 years ago.
I agree with that.
I feel like he's still very good, but I feel like he's
his
a little bit on the...
His fastball went from upper 90s to kind of like Zach Greinke.
And he's way better at college football than he is at college basketball.
No, completely.
He's still elite college football, top two, top three college basketball. I mean, even TNT, whenever he's doing like March Madness, he's pretty far down on the totem pole when it comes to like the best games. 713-780-ESPN. Aggie Matt says, I like Romo. 713-780-3776. See, I'm contrarian when it comes to Romo. Like, I feel like he's regressed a little bit because he's gotten more comfortable. Like, in year one, I thought he was very good, and now he's, like, over-the-top silly. Like, he's, like, giggling during, like, the middle of Nance's play calls, which drives me nuts.
He started probably believing the headlines and getting full... Because
he got
already
paid.
Look, I've personally witnessed how big of an ego Tony Romo has, but I think that, yeah, with the money and the accolades and people saying that he, like, basically recreated the analyst position doing NFL football, he has gotten a little bit off the beaten path that got him to where he is. I would be intrigued by Peyton Manning giving it a shot.
Oh, you know what? I totally missed on Peyton Manning because he would be my dream color guy currently.
I would really like to hear him do some games. Because, again, you don't know if he could do, once the light goes on and you know all you're dealing with from two shots and one shots and replays and all those and graphics, but just from the pure football of it with a personality, Peyton Manning would be great to hear.
See, I think, here's a hot take. I think what Peyton Manning does on the Manning cast is more difficult to do the color commentator's job. Because the color commentator is more reacting based on what they're seeing. Where in Manning cast, like, you're basically creating content, which is a lot more difficult. 713-780-ESPN. Dre saying on Twitch, Keith Jackson. That's Keith Jackson, great college football voice.
Nelly. How about the boy Jackson? Lou Holtz done a fine job at Notre Dame this year. Fumble Ruski.
Very good. That's a pretty good little Keith Jackson there. 713-780-ESPN. 5357 saying, okay, this is terrible. Marshawn Lynch, Kyrie Irving, and Joe Buck. Awkward off the wall and unfiltered. What sport are they doing? Like, is Kyrie Irving calling football with
on the Ocho?
Yeah, what's going on there? What about Breeze, Aikman, and Manning in the booth? You don't have a call guy. I mean, that would be absolutely terrible. I feel like if Drew Breeze gets the top job with Joe Buck, you're not going to like watching the game of the week or the America game of the week.
I agree.
I don't think it'd be very good.
Although I will say this, Jeremy, a lot of times people tuned in for Gruden and Tirico, no matter who the matchup was on Monday Night Football. I don't think anybody in the last year or so tuned in for Levy, Greasy, and Riddick.
No, I mean, there was
an entertainment value. See, that's the thing that I think when you're talking about the A-teams for all these networks, especially the prime times, the Sunday night, Monday night. And Monday night has lost its luster because the schedule has given the best game of the week every week to Sunday night.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, when Monday Night Football was at its heyday, people wanted to hear Howard and Dandy Don and Frank Gifford as much as they wanted to watch the game itself. And Gruden and Tirico kind of were able to keep that alive a little bit with the entertainment value and some of the shenanigans with Gruden. I think they lost all of that. I think they need at least one guy. Now, I'm not saying go back to the days of bringing a comedian in the booth like Dennis Miller.
Yeah, he was too smart, I think.
And that was also like there was no connection there with football. But
remember, Kornheiser did it for, what was it, a year?
He wasn't a fan of that either.
Yeah, not a fan.
But I would be curious about Peyton Manning to see if he could do it. But I think if you're asking me the dream team, especially as it relates to the NFL, I'd go Al Michaels and Madden.
I wouldn't
now,
mind.
Now, who's your sideline reporter?
Larry David.
Okay.
I would love to see Larry David in the booth. I think that'd be hilarious. Sideline reporter to me, I feel like there's a bunch of really good ones that all do the same job.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think you could take or leave a bunch of them. O.J. Simpson.
Well, that's not going to be a popular take. That might actually get you.
You're talking about ratings,
that
right?
That might even
We're
get you a vacation at Gal Media.
Why? Why are you saying O.J. Simpson was very good as a sideline reporter going to get you a vacation?
Because it's O.J. Simpson.
Okay. Go on.
He's kind of got a bad reputation.
Say more things. I believe in the justice system. 2 minutes.
Okay. That's, again, something that you'll have to deal with your followers. I think that I'm not, as much as a lot of people are, I'm not a big fan of Dances with the Stars.
Aaron Andrews?
Aaron Andrews is too much full of Aaron Andrews.
I thought she was pretty good. I think she's good. You know, I can't remember her name, but the... she was the ESPN number one sideline reporter for a while, and then she went to ABC News. She's now covering news. She was very good. Like, I think
ABC number one.
Yeah, she used to be like the top. ESPN. She used to be like the top ESPN sideline reporter for college sports. I think she replaced Aaron Andrews, and now she's working with, I think, ABC News. She's like a big time reporter now for ABC News. She was very good. I think Allie LaForce is very good.
Joe Smith's better half?
Joe Smith's, yeah. I think Joe Smith is the better half there. Just kidding. 713-780-ESPN.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, that's her. Did somebody text that?
No.
Hartung is very good.
Dude, I know broadcasters. Yeah. My wife and I talk about it all the time because she mentions the fact that she's doing news now. And I'm like, you know, she was on ESPN. She goes, you mention that every time. I go, well, it's kind of what I do.
She was a very good sideline reporter. 713-780-ESPN.
I think Maria Taylor's very good.
I think Maria Taylor's pretty good too, yeah. I mean, she was
and
able
she's
to,
versatile.
And she can take a butt chewing from Nick Saban and just move right on, which is something that's important. 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. ESPN. A few of them that are coming in. What about baseball? I loved Adam Wainwright joining the broadcast. See, Adam Wainwright was very insightful. I thought he was kind of dull, though. Like, I don't think he had
the
energy.
I thought he added a little something extra in terms of he was more raw player. He didn't understand the broadcasting game yet, so he was just giving you everything. He was giving you all that kind of behind-the-scenes intel that I like.
I didn't necessarily love the energy, but I thought he was very insightful.
Stories were good, too, like some of the stories of in-game stuff.
Sean McDonough was awful, a couple of the texts that are coming in.
Do you like him? He's a Syracuse guy.
I love Sean McDonough
he's really good.
On college football.
On college football,
but
I didn't
like him on Monday Night Football. Like it's a huge difference to me. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like the pacing or the energy. I don't know, but some people were really good at college. Some people not that great professionally. Tracy Wolfson, she's a very good sideline reporter.
She is good.
And she's good at both football and basketball. Rush Limbaugh. I don't think Rush Limbaugh was ever in the booth, though, right? He was just doing
I think he did.
Was he in the booth? I thought he was only in the studio.
No, I think they had him as part of the telecast. I want to say he was in the booth.
All right. You can keep
sending to look at that.
Yeah, you can keep sending them in. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. When we return, is there separation in the Texans church and state? We tell you what the heck we're talking about next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
William asking us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. What about hockey caller? Steve Levy.
Nope.
Who is Gary Thorne?
Don Cherry until he misspoke, but Don Cherry was the ultimate analyst.
Did he do play-by-play? Analyst.
He was the analyst. And why am I...
Gary Thorne was very good.
No.
Yes, he was.
Gary Thorne is very good. He's another guy that could do crossover to multiple sports. Who's the guy that just retired? The long time.
Oh, Barry
voice
Melrose?
Of hockey. No. I've got to think about it. I can't believe I can't think of his name. Oh my goodness! In terms of play by play, especially with a sport as quick as hockey,
Mike Emmerich, Doc Emmerich,
Doc Emmerich. On top, head and shoulders, all hockey. Doc Emmerich is the end-all, be-all. God, I could just sit. You know what? Even if I'm not a big hockey fan, but if Doc's calling the game, it's entertaining and it is good. And Doc Emmerich was great.
Dickie V, baby, somebody for college basketball.
Hope he gets healthy.
Intern Noah was telling us during the break that he loves listening to Shulman and Bilas, that, or Bilas. That's his favorite TV college basketball
boy, Bilas. Jay Bilas is really good doing college basketball. Dickie V has been the...
He was texting Brendan the other day.
Really?
Brendan was living under a rock and didn't realize what Dickie V was going through, so he tried to get him on the Killer Bees.
And he responded?
He's not only did he respond, but he sent him like 20 responses with like pictures of what he's going through.
Yeah,
and like,
he's
I would love to do it when
chemo
I get better.
And surgeries.
Yeah.
He had, as a matter of fact, he had his vocal cords operated on. He's out for the rest of the year because he's hopeful. The only reason why he did the surgery is because he wants to call games again.
I believe the last game he called was UCLA, Gonzaga, and
Vegas. I think that's right. Remember, because they made a big to-do about his return to
yeah.
the
He was
the road.
Emotional, too, because they introduced him during the game, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, Dickie V responded to Brendan, was like, I would love to. Once I get better, I will.
Oh,
and
God, that's
like
fantastic.
A bunch of pictures whenever he was in the hospital going through what he's going through. And, we wish him well. Hope he gets well. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, Blank and Branham. Separation in the Texans church and state. Are we seeing separation in the church and state? First, I think you have to define the two, right? The church, Jack Easterby, that's needless to say. The state, Nick Caserio, the general manager of the Houston Texans. And I think one of the thoughts when you hired Nick Caserio was you wanted to start to push Easterby out. Like, it's very obvious that Cal Manier is not going to fire Jack Easterby, and I think we just have to learn to live life with Jack Easterby around in the Houston Texans organization. And, like, it's everybody wants him gone, I get it, but it's just not going to happen. It's not realistic. If he's not going to get rid of him, he's just going, I mean, if he wasn't going to get rid of him after the Deshaun Watson stuff, he's not ever going to get rid of him. But I think that it's plausible to learn to tolerate Easterby if you realize that more and more of his power is being diminished. It's starting to go away. He doesn't have a say of the 53. He's not all that responsible in who the Texans are hiring as the head coach, what players are coming in. Do you feel like that Easterby power has diminished a bit?
I do. I think Lovey has played a role in that. I think that things that I've been told by people in and around the team have led me to a positive outlook on that, in that, one, what I was hopeful of seems to be happening in the fact that Nick learned a lesson, and he's kind of pulling back on some of the things that he was doing, like being on the headsets and picking assistant coaches. Lovey has stabilized the locker room by doing just that, picking his coaches and having experience to know how to handle everything from the practices and the players to the press conferences. And those two things become massive wins for the Texans in the long haul. And then with the coaching search, if you believe some of the things that we've been told and some of the information that we've been given, in the fact that Nick had his own really firm ideas in terms of who could and couldn't be the head coach of this football team, and it went against that of the thoughts of Jack and Cal, and that if Nick won out in that and got the team going away from some of the out there ideas to a more solid approach for the short term, because you have to get through these next couple of years where you really, leadership from the coaching perspective, you're not just a leader, you're the front man for the entire organization, because you have no one else that you're looking at, like the best players or otherwise, that I think that there's a lot of positives going on, even though Jack is still in the building. And I think that's going from Nick learning a lesson, who he hired and what Lovey can do.
For a long time, Jack Easterby had a lot of power, and more power than he was suited to have. You know, being a team chaplain for Kansas City and for New England, you know, certainly was not a resume that should have made him the general manager of the Houston Texans. At one point, Jack Easterby was negotiating contracts for the Houston Texans. He locked up Deshaun Watson to this big 4-year deal and gave him the no trade clause, which is being, you know, something that is currently a topic that is difficult for the Houston Texans to try to trade Deshaun Watson, aside from the criminal stuff that's going on as well. But the no trade clause makes it difficult to get the best offer you can, because Deshaun Watson can pick where he wants to go and can turn down any trade that you make. So that was Jack Easterby's doing. Jack Easterby's no longer involved in negotiations. And I think that the power has been diminishing for a while. It's just been difficult to really get a grasp for, you know, how much of it is going away. Like, I don't think Jack Easterby's involved in contract negotiations. I don't think Jack Easterby is breaking down scouting film with the scouts and putting together this big board when the Houston Texans are drafting. Now, he still might be in the room. He's still patting Nick Caserio on the back. He's still shoving Nick Caserio forward, trying to get the game ball after the Houston Texans won game one, and they really gave it to David Culley. And that stuff is not ideal. It's not stuff that you want to see. But also the coaching search, I think, is something you can look at. The fact that it was Lovie Smith, like, nothing really signifies to me that Lovie Smith was a Jack Easterby guy. Like, he was in the room, sure. He's been a defensive coordinator for the Texans this past season, sure. And you can make the case that maybe it was a compromise hire, but there's no way that Lovie Smith was Jack Easterby's guy from day one, because Lovie Smith was nobody's guy from day one, if we're being honest.
Well, let's also be honest that Lovie Smith comes from the old school mentality of earn your stripes, work your way up the coaching tree. You know, do your due diligence as a coach, then you become a coordinator, then you establish your resume and your background and your respectability in a locker room. And Jack Easterby has none of those things. And the fact that from a Lovie Smith perspective, he's the anti-Lovie Smith guy, except for the fact that they're both very strong in their faith. Other than that, you look at it and go, Lovie Smith's not going to take a guy that's been a team chaplain as his only thing on his resume that states that he's worked in a locker room with a football team and suddenly be a guy that should be making decisions and should be involved in every aspect of football. And Lovie Smith's not going to be a guy that tolerates that. David Culley was just happy to be there. So he was going to, and if Jack had any part in him getting the job, then he was just going to have Jack around figuring he was one of his guys. And we all know from what Jack does and how he goes about his business, you could be his guy one day and you can get stabbed in the back by him the next. So I think Lovie, again, he added so much stability and so much of a calming factor as well. But one of the things is he's not going to take the BS. He's not going to deal with the sideshow that's Jack Easterby unless the guy's got something that qualifies him to be in discussions.
Jordan sending in a text, 713-780-ESPN. Thank you. Jack Easterby derangement syndrome is so 2021. Dude's wings have been clipped. Let's move on. I think that's a good text, and I would love to move on. But I still think that the black cloud that hangs over Jack Easterby, the fact that he did once have all of this control, he still does have the ear of Kyle McNair. Now, it might not have the same sway because you actually have a good football guy, or you hope is a good football guy around in Nick Caserio, and you've hired a competent head coach in Lovie Smith. I think those are signs to, you know, pointing in the right direction. I think Jack Easterby is down a few rungs on the ladder for the Houston Texans. That's good news. But the fact that he's not completely gone, like, I'm willing to look the other way. I'm willing to look forward. I'm willing to look ahead, but I'm still looking out of the corner of my eye, looking back to see if Jack Easterby is having any sort of negative influence in the organization. So I agree that we can move on, but still out of the corner of my eye, I'm still making sure Jack Easterby's not having sway with the organization.
Yeah, no, I think the most encouraging thing that I could have possibly have heard from, and let's start here. If Lovie Smith's name was involved in the coaching search discussion from day one, I think we would have a lot of people would have even a more encouraging and better outlook on everything and the way it went down. The way he got involved in the process and the way he was selected makes everybody kind of step back and makes everybody kind of question the selection. But other than that, when you talk, we had Adam Rank on yesterday, who's a big Bears fan that works for NFL Network, and he can talk about all the success and the good things as to why Lovie Smith was absolutely the right guy for this job. That's exciting to me. What's exciting to me from a management perspective is we're still evaluating Nick Caserio, as you said, and I wanted to hold out to see two things. The draft, when he has a full draft class of picks to fill and who he picks and how they pan out, and then what he does with Watson. But on top of that, when I look at everything and the way that I analyze it, it's also that he's learning his lessons. He's also being able to know and pick his spots. He's not trying to do it all and meddle in everything. And the fact that, one, that he let Lovie pick his assistant.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
Is a massively good sign. And also that he's not going to need to be on the headsets if you believe Lovie. And that's another good sign. And then the third thing that really resonates with me is the fact that he knew who he wanted in terms of what characteristics had to be had for a guy that was going to be the next head coach of the Texans. And he would not let Jack and Cal sway him this time. And that is really, really good for me.
See, I think the headset thing is more perception than actual, like, reality, because I look at that in the sense of, okay, well, Nick Caserio is willing to put some pride aside, willing to put some know-how aside, and maybe it was just the fact that he felt that he had to help David Culley because David Culley was incompetent in the job. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HR&P listener line. Wood, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Killer Bees, fellas, y'all are so wrong about the power that Jack Easterby still has. He still had that same power. They were getting ready to make one of the biggest mistakes out there when they were getting ready to hire McGowan. The only reason why they didn't hire McGowan is because of the lawsuit. Lovie Smith was just an afterthought. That's when they realized that the media from Houston, the national media, the NFL was going to eat them up alive if they had to hire Josh McGowan with no NFL experience. And Jack Easby was the one put it out there last year that let's bring him in for some interviews, you know, and everything like this. And then they decided to go with David Cutley because they wanted a puppet on the string. Jack Easby is still controlling things. Now, him and Nick Caserio both are doing the same thing because they what they're doing is they're taking Kyle McNair innocent and taking advantage of him because he have no clue on how to run an organization. He don't have true football people in here to run an organization. He have a GM that's learning for the first time that was on the Belichick wing, and everybody looked good on the Belichick wing. Now he's up here in Houston. He brought in David Cutley as his first head coach and made a mistake doing that. So I'm not high on Nick Caserio at all. I'm not high on the fact that he got rid of a linebacker, didn't get no draft picks for him. Cunningham was wreaking havoc for the last 2 years. We didn't get no draft picks for him. We got rid of a defensive lineman, a Manihue. Didn't get anything for him. You know, so I'm not sold on Nick Caserio as far as the GM ability on what he can do.
Thanks for the call. Yeah. Look, a lot of things you're missing, though, in terms of our
interpretation. Let's react on the other side. And that was good stuff. There were a lot of things that you said that I agree with. And if you would have called on a Friday, you probably would have been the leader in the clubhouse for Frankie's Friday Fire. I want to respond to what Wood had to say whenever we come back. The fact that they were going to hire Josh McCown, is that true? Also, Lovie Smith being a candidate late in the process, how much is that, you know, a truth serum, I guess, to them hiring Josh McCown or at least going down that path? And also the idea that Nick Caserio, not a true football guy. A lot to unpack with that call from Wood. Let's do it when we return. If you want to get in, you can. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, I want to tell you about Apollo Men's Health yet again, because Apollo Men's Health, ladies, this is for you too, men and women. If you need more energy in your life on a daily basis, there are ways that you can get that done. And there are women in the lobby every single week when I'm in there, waiting for their ability to get in and get the hormone therapy taken care of so they get that energy on a weekly basis. You can do the same. You can get involved. You can talk to Dr. O and his staff. You can figure out how you can get more energy in your life on a daily basis if that's something that's been ailing you. The bottom line is your health is your wealth. And if you invest in yourself, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you're having problems, they can get you answers and results that you thought were not attainable anymore. The simple fact is they got everything under one roof, two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. And what they do is exactly what you need. They get you energy. They get you to feeling better. You want to get on a workout program, they can help you lose weight and gain muscle. They can help you recover quicker when you get sore after working out on weights in the gym. They have all the options, even stuff for your smoothies and all the different nutritional things that you'd like to get from powders and vitamins and fat burners. All you got to do is set up your first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com. When you do, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot on your first visit. That'll get you going in the right direction. But then be honest with them when they ask you the tough questions. They'll put you on a plan that works. They're going to get your results. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5. Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Blank, Branham, intern Owa, filling in for Brandon today, doing a fine job behind the glass. We were talking about separation in the Texans church and state. It's something that you need for the Houston Texans, because if the church symbolizes Jack Easterby, if the state symbolizes Nick Caserio, you want that separation. You don't want Jack Easterby involved in any of the decisions. And Wood brought some fire right before we went to the break. I thought it was a very good phone call, even if for most of the points we don't agree. I thought he had some really good points. 713-780-ESPN. And where he's at with Nick Caserio, look, that's something that I've been saying. Like, I'm not giving Nick Caserio any more excuses. Absolutely not. And we were pretty critical of Nick Caserio in year one, saying that he hasn't won a trade. The free agents that he's bringing in are just these old veteran dudes that aren't going to be any part of the rebuild. We talked about how they released Zach Cunningham, and the dude immediately goes to Tennessee and is starting on the best team in the AFC, at least the number one seed, the best regular season team in the AFC. They got a 6th-rounder for Minihue, a 7th-rounder for Ingram. I don't think Nick Caserio Casserio has won a trade as the Houston Texans GM. And we mentioned how we're going to look at every single thing he does under the microscope, and we're not giving him a free pass at all.
We also said the clock really started ticking the minute that he screwed up the head coach, coaching hire of David Culley. And no matter who he hired and who he brought in, that the minute that he brought in this second coach in 2 years, that the clock was firmly on him, and that he was having all eyes on him in the crosshairs until he, and then I've always been firm in saying, I'm holding out judgment until I see, just like in all the general managers with all the teams in Houston, when they make their first really big impactful move. And the fact that we saw it with Click at the trade deadline, when he resurrected the bullpen, when he's done some things, when he's had to do some things, and we're going to see what happens with Correa. He let Springer get away, but we knew that was inevitable. It's more about the moves to be made with trades and moves, and in the case of the NFL drafting, than it is like basically a player deciding to stay or leave. Because sometimes, like Gerrit Cole, no matter what you do, the mind's made up. They know where they want to play. But from a Casserio standpoint, I said, until we see what he does with Watson, until we see what he does when he has a full complement of draft picks, I'm going to try and hold out hope, but we've been very honest about every move that he's made.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't think you can close the book on Nick Casserio. I think if you were to look at each year as a chapter, the first chapter on Nick Casserio was a very bad one, to Wood's point, hiring David Culley. I mean, he might be one of the worst hires in NFL history. That is a bad knock on Nick Casserio. The fact that he has not won a trade as a general manager of the Houston Texans, that is a negative for Nick Casserio. Could he improve as a GM? Only time will tell. The Lovie Smith hire, while it was a weird way to get about it, he did improve at the head coaching position. He did let Lovie Smith make some decisions. And then the whole headset thing, where if what Lovie Smith is saying is accurate, that Nick Casserio is not going to be sending dialogue to Lovie Smith. I think that's Nick Casserio showing that he's going to put his pride aside. Now, look, that's a very, very, very small victory. What really he's going to hang his hat on at the end of the day is handling this rebuild, handling a critical draft, and handling the Deshaun Watson trade when and if that ever comes. As far as it goes with the hiring Josh McCown, look, I've been on this train. I feel like Josh McCown was going to be the head coach of the Houston Texans until the Brian Flores lawsuit forced the hand of the Houston Texans to go in a different direction, and I do believe Lovie Smith was a compromise hire. That said, that is a reach. We don't know for sure that Josh McCown was going to be the head coach.
No, that's the key.
And you might even be able to say that was Easterby's guy. Nick Casserio was pushing back at that, saying no, but was doing a favor, giving McCown the interview. So I think that is a bit of jumping to conclusions. And look, I've been guilty of it, saying that Josh McCown was going to be the head coach of the Texans. I know that John McClain was reporting this. But I think that if you look over the last 2 years of the leaks that have come out from the Houston Texans, one, they've not been all that accurate. I wonder why. Maybe it's Cal and Jack Easterby with those leaks. But this one, Josh McCown's going to be the next head coach of the Texans.
Within a week, Deshaun Watson's going to be traded to the Dolphins.
Exactly.
Yeah, those guys. That's what I was just going to say. Sometimes it's the media spin that takes it further than even those guys wanted it to go. They wanted to do McCown a solid. Did they probably think about him as a guy? They didn't bring him in and get him off of the high school practice field, and also before that, off of being on someone else's roster, so that they could say that they just wanted him short term. They have interest in him. They know he's a football mind. But I think that because the grinder started working with local and national media, the minute that they started putting him out there and said he was going even for a second interview this cycle, let alone the interview last time, that everybody started creating their own rumors in their mind to start saying he's a finalist. That means he could be the head coach. And I think the more people I've talked to, the more the indication was Jack would have loved that. Cal would have been open to that because Cal's clueless and he's Jack's boy. But that Nick was not open to it. Nick was not looking for that kind of guy. Now, I'm not going to tell you that Nick had Lovie in his sights the whole time either, but I think that the Flores situation changed a lot of things for a lot of people, and that the one thing that I was encouraged about was that Nick was not as on board with a guy like McCown as Jack and Cal, and inevitably, McCown didn't get the job, and that has to say something for Nick Casserio.
Yeah, I think that if that logic is true, that Nick had the pushback of McCown because McCown was Easterby and Cal's boy, I think that's even another angle that you can look at is the separation in the Texans church and state, where Nick Casserio is looking for greater division from state as opposed to church. And if McCown was Easterby's guy, McCown's not the head coach of the Houston Texans. And if you're pro-state as opposed to pro-church of Jack Easterby, then I think you have to look at that as a positive sign for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, you have to hold out hope at least, right? You have to believe that, and I think a lot of it is power-based too. I think that Nick realizes, look, Jack did me a solid by finding me when I wasn't on the committee's list, the search committee's list. So I'm trying to do a solid for Jack, but at a certain point, I'm also going to draw a line in the sand and say, when tough decisions have to be made, when big moves have to be executed, I'm not going to have you and a clueless owner be the end-all be-all. I'm still going to establish that I was brought in to do this job my way, and my way is going to be different than what you guys think.
Jordan texting us saying the McCown story was blown out of proportion by the media. Otherwise, he would have been on the staff. Flores was most likely to be the Texans' next head coach until he went scorched earth on the NFL. I think that's partially true. I don't think John McClain would report something, though, if he wasn't told by somebody powerful in the organization.
Imagine John McClain being fed something.
That's mean. That's very mean.
I mean, but he was fed it, and he went with it, and of course you're going to go for it. Look, there are pawns within the media game all over the place.
Yep.
If you got a relationship as high up as McClain has, you go with what you're told.
And he wouldn't go with what he's told unless it was somebody significant.
Mm-hmm.
If it was somebody like Cal McNair, if it was somebody like Jack Easterby, if it was somebody like Nick Caserio, which I think it was probably the first two as opposed to the last one. And if you look at the last two major things that John McClain reported, one was he reported that Josh McCown was going to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. He also said that a Deshaun Watson trade was imminent right before the NFL trade deadline on November 2nd, yet that did not happen. There's a school of thought that he was fed that information by either Cal or by either Jack Easterby, and Nick Caserio obviously didn't give in to that. He said, no, we can't trade him for this because it's pennies on the dollar. We're better off waiting until the offseason because we're not very good right now anyways. Why not? So I think that there is a logical chance that Nick Caserio pushed back on the Deshaun Watson imminent trade on November 2nd, and I think there's a very good chance that he pushed back on the idea of Josh McCown being Easterby and Cal's boy and ultimately got a compromise hire in Lovie Smith because he wanted no part of Josh McCown.
No, I don't. I'm hopeful, and I don't disagree. I'm hopeful that, again, like I said, look, I can't expect Nick to come in here and know everything and be able to do everything in his first year, and he proved that he made plenty of mistakes, as we've highlighted, through all the shows that we've done when he's made moves, trades, etc. But I also believe that he is a smart guy, like you know, sing his praises for.
I say he sounds smart.
Okay, and I think that a lot of that translates to some of his actions that show he is intelligent because he did learn a lesson. He does realize that he's got a guy that's coaching his football team that probably has more experience than he does on more different avenues as it relates to the football operations on a daily basis on the field in the locker room. So he's going to take a step back. So he's learning lessons there. If he's also learning how to deal with the owner and Jack Easterby, and he's also learning how to establish clear-cut guidelines and a pecking order so that he can do what he was hired to do, then I'm going to respect him even more.
6183 says, this just in, pro teams always leak horse S-word. We know. We're aware of that. But I think what we try to do is we try to read through the horse S-word to try to find out the truth. Because I think if you read through the horse S-word, and you can kind of figure out where the leaks are coming from, and you start putting the puzzle pieces together, I think you can find the true story. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Friend of the show, Mike Florio, with some new information on Deshaun Watson. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Whataburger got my order wrong this morning. My go-to is
What'd you call it? Whataburger?
Yeah, that's right. My go-to is the breakfast.
Might have been the biggest dagger you've thrown. People are going to be very offended by you criticizing their favorite burger joint.
I throw some daggers. You guys got to be paying attention. Anyways, breakfast on a bun's my go-to. They gave me a breakfast burger, which I've been intrigued by, so I wasn't disappointed per se, although I was a little bit because it wasn't my go-to. I didn't realize they had like this mayonnaise-y cream on it, and the burger patty was kind of weird too. If I'm trying to evaluate the two, breakfast on a bun versus the breakfast burger, breakfast on a bun's so much better. So much better. Keep that in mind if you're ever looking
sure
to
will.
Get some breakfast from Whataburger.
I'm still trying to figure out when you throw those zingers.
All the time. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, friend of the
Your
show.
Your guy.
Yeah, I love Mike Florio.
Yeah.
Mike Florio is a wonderful human being. Here's the actually, Brendan's kind of talked me off of my dislike for Mike Florio a little bit because
Brendan has a lot of influence with you.
Yeah, I'm an impressionable young man, middle-aged man. Anyways, Like, a lot of people look at Florio like he's reporting news. And I think that's what rubs me the wrong way, because it's more like sensationalism. He's more of a takesman than he is a reporter. And people just pass off Florio's stuff as, like, reporting the news when it's really more of an opinion. Todd had a good point on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, saying, what's Florio going to write about when Deshaun Watson gets traded? But anyways, what Florio said today, the latest, was that per a source with knowledge of the situation, multiple teams are indeed willing to make the deal for Deshaun as long as the criminal situation is resolved. Remember that. As long as the criminal situation is resolved. Last year, the Dolphins insisted on a settlement of all cases before a trade would be finalized. The Panthers were willing to make a deal regardless of the civil or criminal cases, but Watson didn't want to waive his no trade clause for a trade to Carolina. The teams currently willing to do a deal without a settlement are unknown at this time, but they're out there lurking and strategizing and planning as the quarterback carousel prepares to spin. So a few things here. I think the biggest thing from this story is the fact that as long as the criminal situation is resolved. So maybe we're putting a little bit too much stock in the civil stuff, although there's some prominent attorneys that feel like if the civil stuff got figured out, that the criminal stuff would follow as well. But Rusty Hardin put the April 1st deadline on when they expect to know something in terms of the grand jury deciding whether or not to indict Deshaun Watson on criminal charges. But it sounds like some teams are willing to make that move for Deshaun Watson as long as the criminal stuff doesn't come to fruition.
But it also sounds to me like the idea that I've had all along has to happen, and that is that you have to get a list of the teams he will and won't be traded to, and you need to get that sooner rather than later so that you have a clear understanding of who you can deal with and who you're wasting your time talking to. Because that, to me, sounds like if they could have had a deal but he got to nix a trade to Carolina, that's a problem to me all in itself, because that's another obstacle where you don't need any more obstacles in this course, right? You've already got enough to deal with all the off-the-field stuff. But now if you're talking about the no trade, and when you actually get some traction with a team that's actually interested, that might give you close to what you want, and he's going to poo-poo on it, that's a problem. So you need to get with David Mulgeta. You need to get with Deshaun's group. You need to get everybody in a room or on a Zoom chat or somewhere else and say, hey, here's a deadline for you. I'm going to give you till March 15th. I need a list of the yeses and the nos, teams you would accept a trade to and you wouldn't. If we can somehow notarize it, have everybody sign it so we're on the same page with it, so that it's part of the contract or part of the agreement so we can go forward with it, then these are the only teams I'm talking to. These are the teams, no matter how interested they are, I can't talk to unless I talk to you first and see if you might reconsider. But other than that, let's go forward so that I can do that and not waste my time, because that would piss me off if I knew I had a deal working with Carolina and Deshaun came in with his happy ass and went, you know what, I'm not into it. I don't want to go there.
What is fascinating about this is we even talked about this a little bit the other day with Clutch Sports and Rich Paul, and basically how they force the hand of a lot of GMs and teams and basically control a lot of the player movement around the NBA. You're seeing the same thing now. As soon as you sign a player to the no trade clause, I mean, goodbye GM trying to find optimal value and maximizing value for a player. At that point, it's almost like free agency, where Deshaun Watson and his agent are going to tell you, okay, this is the landing spot that we want. Now go make it happen. Now, a lot of times the agent will facilitate, right? Like, he's still going to get 3 first round draft picks or whatever. They're not going to hold him over the barrel and hold him hostage and be like, oh yeah, you're only getting a 3rd round pick. So it still works out to be like kind of an even trade, but it's not optimizing what you could get in a return if he didn't have that no trade clause. I think your idea would be great from a Nick Caserio point of view. It'd be great from a Houston Texans point of view. Give me 5-6 teams. That way I can go out, create a demand, create a market, and you have 5 or 6 teams negotiating against one another, which really increases the value of what you could get in return. I don't think Deshaun Watson's going to give the Texans that favor.
Why is that detrimental to Deshaun Watson in any way, shape, or form? Because you're actually trying to facilitate and cater to him by saying, hey, tell us where you want to go, and that's who we're going to work with, as opposed to us working with teams to make trades where we find out down the road. You either reconsidered, or right from the get-go, you could have told us you weren't interested in that. I think it does everybody a favor.
Well, I think that if he gives you a list of 5 or 6, that he could potentially be traded to his 5th or 6th landing spot. So I feel like he's going to be very selective, and he's basically going to want to pick where he plays.
That's another interesting point, like how many teams have to be on the list, right? You can't sit there and pinpoint and say, I need 10. It's entirely up to him how many are on the list. If you pull a James Harden and you ask for everything from them and they come back with 1 or 2,
What are you going to do, though, if he does?
It's problematic, but you didn't necessarily personally make this deal, but this is, no pun intended, the bed you have to lie in because of Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby and the deal they made with Deshaun.
The ghost of Jack Easterby, the ghost of the guy just down the hall.
He ain't dead. He's still there.
Yeah, he's still very much alive. He's alive and well, I guess, although from a Texans fan's perspective, probably not. That's the fear, though. I mean, that's why Deshaun Watson's not... I mean, I think you can come to terms and, like, have some sort of agreement, but I don't think Deshaun Watson's going to give you a list of 5 or 6 teams that he'd be willing to play for. I think it's more reasonable and more likely that he's like, okay, here's 2 or 3. Washington football team interests me. Philadelphia interests me. It doesn't look like Miami's really a viable candidate anymore because it seems like they're going to go all in with Tua and their new cool head coach is going to cater the offense around him. But, yeah, I don't think Deshaun Watson's going to give you much of a list. He's going to hold you over the barrel, and he has that right because you have the no-trade clause.
But I also think that the one thing that limits him is the fact that he needs to get back on the field sooner rather than later to prove he can still play and to prove that he can still kind of salvage his reputation both on and off the field. And so, therefore, he realizes if he gets in limbo for a second straight year, teams are going to be less and less interested in trying to acquire his services. Teams are going to be less in terms of the package they're offering to try and get him. And those things are going to factor in as well. So he's got to still be careful. He can't be in a position of James Harden. And also going back, this translates all the way back to the Rodgers situation and what we're dealing with too. Just the way players talk to players and they feel like, hey, if a player gets his way, even though he's got a long-term contract at big money, and he can have all the negotiation power and he can orchestrate where he wants to go, they talk to say, you can do it too. And then everybody starts thinking, even across sports, that this is something that's now going to be the norm. Well, don't think that guys and general managers at teams don't talk too. And don't think that Gutekunst didn't think the one thing he was going to do is he was going to establish, you're not going to do that here. Like, I didn't promise anybody. And there's nothing in writing that says, I got to trade you, and we own your rights. So you got to be real careful how you handle the situation too. And I think the same way with the Texans. Like, be careful what you wish for, Deshaun. You can get cute and you only give us a team or two. But if we can't work out a deal, the next thing we're going to do is we're going to make you show up. And if you don't show up, or you want to make this an issue, then the league's going to get involved, and now you're running the risk of losing even more money than you've already lost.
That'd be a bad look for Deshaun, but I still feel the Texans have more to lose in that scenario because you're still going to pay somebody $39 million next year that's going to fake an ankle injury and sit out for 17 games. 6183 texting, do you think there's any chance there's been an under-the-table agreement that since the Texans paid Watson $10 million, I think it was more than that, to not play, that he's become more open to other trades? I don't think there's been any.
I think it was
10
last year. The new big deal comes in this year.
Okay, well, either way, I don't think that there's been any sort of under-the-table deal between the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson about, okay, you sit out, you go collect your money, you stay away, you try to get your legal affairs in order. I still feel like Deshaun Watson still feels, and his agent certainly feels this way, that they still have all the control, and I still feel like they're going to be very picky about selecting their next team. And what's scary from a Houston Texans perspective, I really don't think they're going to get this King's ransom that they thought that they were going to get.
We'll see, but the thing is, as long as you still have the power in the negotiations, you're not going to give it up. There was no under-the-table deal done, and he's still going to be very calculated in where he goes. He's not going to go to a team that doesn't have a good roster around the quarterback position so that he can't have the best chance to succeed. He's not going to go to a city that he doesn't feel like he can be comfortable in and that there are going to be endorsement opportunities and there's going to be, from state taxes to all the different things, cost of living, everything will be factored in, sunshine and the amount of it. All those things are going to be factors for him. And because he has the ability to say yes or no, why not hold on to every bit of that power?
Yeah, I can't blame him. And even the legal stuff, I know it's like a bad, negative stain on him. It's a black cloud over him. I think he's separating the two, legal stuff and football. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Major League Baseball is locked out. Major League Baseball saying if a deal's not done by Monday, they're going to have fewer regular season games. The regular season games are in jeopardy. We know that, but also some concerning news on Lance McCullers Jr. We talk about it next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey's not only the owner of the company, he's the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association. That means anything you need to be done with your roof needs to be done by Fitz Roofing because he is respected by his peers, he does a great job with his customers, and he has the best ratings in the business. He also has the best warranties, and he uses the best products, starting with CertainTeed shingles. In fact, he's a certified... I got to get this right. I can't even think of it now, the exact term for it, but he is a shingle master for the using the best shingles in the entire country. Only 1% of the roofers in the entire United States have the ability to have that title. He's got that too. He's got all the colorful vehicles that are traveling around town. But the best thing that he does to take care of his customers is he does a free, no obligation inspection that costs you absolutely nothing. And it's not just about roofing, by the way, because he can fix every leaky roof or put a new roof on your business or your home, but he also does home repairs. They do fences and yards. They're going to do a fence in my yard next week. The fact is they do so much, but it'll cost you absolutely nothing just to see how they can get involved. Call 832-521-3001, and they are going to come to you and tell you how they can help, what they can do, and what they would do if they were to fix your problem. Then they're going to keep going with the rest of their day. You want them to actually do that work? Just schedule the appointment and find out before, during, and after the work is completed. They are going to have great customer service. They are going to do fantastic work. They're going to take care of you every step of the way. Check them out today, FITZRoofing.com. And remember, Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by.